So now it's my pleasure to introduce Professor Rosanna DeMarco. She's, as many of you know, an associate professor of nursing here at Boston College's Connell School of Nursing. And she's an advanced practice nurse in community health nursing with additional certification as an AIDS care registered nurse. She received her PhD from Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan. And her program of research addresses women, marginalization, and health behaviors. She has explicated and tested for over 10 years a gender-sensitive theoretical framework called the Silencing the Self Theory as it relates to nurses in the workplace, nursing students, and women living with HIV/AIDS. She's a co-producer of the film Women's Voices, Women's Lives, an HIV prevention education film used in her intervention work with women in the inner city of Boston. We'll be seeing clips from that today. And it was recently translated into Vietnamese and has been used as an intervention and prevention tool with male audiences as well. So we're delighted to have Rosanna here with us and very much looking forward to your presentation.
Thanks, Eric. Sure. Well, welcome, everybody. I didn't want anybody to feel like they were on a blind date, so we had this illustrious introduction. But I wanted to say fundamentally, I wanted to start off with thinking about the title a little bit, Catholic Intellectual Traditions and Ways of Knowing, and just sort of set up what I'm about to talk to you about from that perspective. When I started to get involved with the Catholic Intellectual Traditions group, which was an initiative from the provost, as you probably know, I was talking to some of my colleagues, and I told them about it, and they said, well, I'm not Catholic. It has nothing to do with me. And I remember, hi, Nancy, and I remember trying to get a handle on that, to understand what that actually meant to me as we were developing as a group. And one of the things I think it meant as I did more and more reading and as I tried to describe this to my colleagues was that it had nothing to do with being Catholic active or not, or Christian active or not, or Muslim or not, or Buddhist or not. It had more to do with the ethic of being part of a Catholic university and being a reflective group of people. And that really has been the center of what I'm about to talk to you about, a journey about working with women living with HIV here locally, who are consistently, for me, African American or Black. Statistically, that's where they show up, and this is where who I see on the street where I live. Was that the name of a song somewhere? Okay, so anyway, the point is that I think from a methodologic perspective and even from a philosophical perspective, I learned a long time ago, even though I was trained as a researcher, as a scientist, the truth is that we get information from all different ways of knowing. And so I've always been what I would call a mixed methods researcher, meaning that I think there are things we can deduce. We can measure empirically, but I think there are things we need to listen to and stories that need to be told. And somehow those two things really give us information. And it's difficult to do both. It's a lot of work, it's a lot of time, and in reality it's a lot of money. But in truth, it's in my way of knowing or how to know, it's the only way to really get an accurate view of what's going on. And so this idea of reflectivity or being reflective as from the Catholic intellectual tradition perspective, for me it's been sustained reflection that's really helped me understand what women who are living with HIV need and want and feel. So I have a handout that I gave you, and I'm going to be talking about points from this. This is for you to take home, maybe to rip up later, or you know, write a number that you need to remember on later also. But I'll be talking to it and referencing to it, but we're not going to go line by line. It's my promise to Eric and Suzanne to stay on target with the objectives of my talk. But the first piece of information I need to share, and I think it's fairly obvious, is that women of color are really attacked and with a sense of unfairness in some ways. They, more than any group of women in this country and in the world, are affected by HIV. Statistically, we see a very grim picture. We see either unchanging statistics about incidence or prevalence, or we see rising incidence. One of the things I have on your handout is that you'll see it in bold on the first page at the bottom, is that there was sort of a confession of sorts last at the end of last summer. The CDC, JAMA reported this also, really fessed up and said they made a mistake and they underestimated really what was going on with HIV. The numbers were really higher than they ever believed them to be in the United States. And that, again, this group of African Americans or blacks, statistically black is how it comes up, which means African Americans and other individuals that would identify as black, they have an unequal share of this particular virus, having the virus, living with the virus, and actually dying from AIDS. So it's a formidable problem. And then we hear in the healthcare community this notion of health disparities. It's become a very popular and sobering thing. And, you know, when I think about health disparities, I think about two things. And it's important to talk about it because I am a public health, community health nurse. My interests have not been so much in the acute care areas of hospitals, just to set that forth in terms of nursing and health. Although I've needed hospitals when I was acutely ill and we need them there, but I've been more interested in how people sustain themselves in terms of wellness and health promotion in their neighborhoods. So my interest has been not so much how the diabetic gets their tray in the hospital, but how the diabetic makes choices when the tray isn't forthcoming in their real world. So what we see is we see a lot of issues at hand in the community setting that are really stunning. And I was interested in trying to figure out what was going on for women living with HIV, specifically African American women. So what I did was I started a 5-year journey on this sustained reflection, this Catholic intellectual tradition that I think really lives here and breathes here at Boston College, and also this way of knowing what's going on. This tradition, from a research perspective, is called community-based participatory research. And what I did for 5 years was on a monthly basis, we did a prevention program. We went out, two nurses and myself, and we did topical conversations with women who would come. We served lunch. We're pretty sure they just came for the lunch, but they got whatever else we talked about. That might be the case today. No hard feelings. The truth is that we talked about a lot of things, but unlike the usual thing that we do when having an evaluation at the end, basically we talked to the women in groups and said, what should we talk about next? What are you struggling with? What would you like to what do you want to address? And we would go with the flow. Well, in the fifth year, I gave a talk because they wanted to talk about the fact, as women, they felt that they were struggling with not being able to tell people in the health profession, in the health community, what they needed and felt that they needed, or just what they felt. So health disparities really started getting translated to me as it's not just equity in terms of fairness, in terms of what one gets. It's also how do we help people be able to have a voice, to be able to get what they need. Because, you know, we're not digging out into the community asking people to come in. They have to have some levels of advocacy, too. And disparities occur at both ends of that spectrum. And so one day I gave a talk about this theory, Silencing the Self, which I had been very interested, very gender-oriented, based in psychology, talking about why it is that women choose silence many times. This is not a sexist idea, because men silence themselves also, for different reasons perhaps, at least theoretically we see that. But I gave this talk. At the end of the talk, it was like the white professor from Boston College who had come down to Dorchester to speak. You know, it was the answer to a dream in that I was participating with them as an equal in this conversation. I wasn't trying to tell them what to do. And 4 women came up to me, were all living with HIV, all African American, said, we're tired of listening to you and all the other nurses. We didn't take this personally. And we want to do something. We want to use our voice, and we want to do something for other women in our community. We want to speak to youth, and we want to speak to women who are living with HIV to help them in their process. So I said, fine, as we had 5 months before. What would you like to do? And they said, well, we'd like to make a film. So I started internally hemorrhaging, thinking about how would I ever do that, because that's not my skill set. And BC was my skill set, waiting. I had just arrived here, and Chad Minnick, who is at the School of Nursing, who's an experienced filmmaker, became the filmmaker. Dr. Ann Norris, a colleague interested in HIV, we teamed up together and we made the film Women's Voices, Women's Lives. So the film, I'm going to show you a clip right now so you get a sense of the clip, and we're going to talk some more about where the film goes. The film is a way of knowing. It's a way for women to reflect on what it is like to live with HIV. The clip we're going to show you is the clip where they're talking about what it's like to feel stigma when everything changes in your life after you've been diagnosed. Just think about this. This is very important. These women did the most courageous thing they could possibly do on their own. And this is this process of reflecting with them and staying with them with the topic at hand. They disclosed their HIV status publicly to help a lot of other people. When we're done with the clip, I'll tell you where the film's gone. It's amazing, and how it's affected these women. And then, you know, how we've come to know more about HIV through this film.
When I was diagnosed, I was totally devastated, and for about a year or two, I totally went into denial. It's like, you know, look at me, I'm fine, nothing's going to happen to me. And what scared me most was that I was so ashamed that I couldn't even, like, tell my family. I was afraid that people around me would know. I would listen to people talk about people with HIV, not knowing that I was in their circle and I had HIV. I became homeless. I used to sleep in the Boston Commons. I slept on the rotunda in the Boston Commons, and my penthouse was the fan room inside the Park Street Station. And these are places that, in my life, in normal times, I would never have been. But because of the fear and the running that I was doing because of HIV, that's where it took me. It took me to homeless shelters. It took me to clothing bags to get a pair of clothes just for the day. You know, it took me into constantly unsafe predicaments.
I felt that I was damaged. I felt that I was damaged. I felt that I was one of those dead cans on the shelf, that I was damaged. I felt that I was never going to have a relationship again. Nobody was ever going to love me. I just didn't think that I was going to be able to deal with HIV. I felt very, very suicidal. I was very scared. I was hurt. And I just felt like my life was ending. I had AIDS. I didn't have AIDS and I was going to die. You know,
my biggest one was because I found out when I was pregnant. So I wanted to think of what could I do to have a healthy baby? How could I do this? Would my baby be infected? What kind of things would I have to deal with having an infected child? Dealing with the fact that I was having unprotected sex, and that these are the things that I did to myself.
Living with HIV, it has totally changed my life. It has totally changed what I think. Where I see things, how I act. My life is totally different now. I don't feel like a normal person. I feel that I have something inside of me that's slowly but surely killing me. And there was nothing I can do about it. I can't do anything about it. I can't poke a hole in me and just let it squish out. I can't do that. I was pregnant. I had to bury a baby at 6 months old, and basically for a long time I had to live with the guilt that this is something that I did to this child, that because I didn't take precaution, I got pregnant and had a baby that was infected with HIV, and had to deal with that.
I tried to deal with being HIV, and even then, since then, up until now, my life has totally changed. You'll find out that the people that you thought were your friends, some of them are not really going to be there for you. You're going to be disappointed in the way that people react to you sometimes. Sometimes you're going to be overjoyed, but sometimes you're going to be really hurt by the negative attitudes that you get from people around you.
They look it up like with dirt, with trash to begin with. They think you're either a sexual pervert or a low-life dope fiend and God is punishing you. You can't go to tell everybody, even in your own family, you can't go to people and say, I don't feel good, and expect a hug and some sympathy in return. No, because half of them will say, well, you shouldn't have been with them like that. You shouldn't have done that. You know you shouldn't have had sex with that boy. Come on, girl, let me just do something. Take your two bills. Does not make this thing all right. Not at all. It's horrible.
It hurts, you know, to know that with all the education that's there, that people still are so cruel sometimes, you know, making fun of us and stuff like that.
So we see in this sort of clip from the film, this reflection around a couple of things. First of all, the women are older women. I have to be careful when I say that. They're over 40. They're in the range of 40 and up, and they've been living with the virus for a long period of time. The sector of African American women that are living with HIV are heterosexual women. So we're talking about women in heterosexual relationships. And the truth is that this film has something that probably a deep question within it, and that is, how can a film of African American women in Boston speak to a woman in Vietnam or in Africa, or a white woman, or a woman from Cape Verde? How could it be? And yet when we actually took the women with us, because women edited the film with us, it was a collaboration since day one, because we believed that the reflective meaning came from the women with us, not us telling the women what it was that we needed in terms of data and having them work through that process with us. We showed the film to many audiences that were very mixed. And both Anne Norris and I were very concerned that somebody would say, that has to do with Dorchester and black women, that's not me. It's just not me, that's not my life, you know, that's not who I am. And we asked the question over and over again. We asked it of Cape Verdean women, white women, Haitian women. We actually asked it of men. We had an all-male group that we actually showed the film to, which is another story, a very interesting outcome with that. But all of them said that after the first 60 seconds, they don't see African-American women. They see women who are struggling, who are poor, who are in relationships with men, and are trying to deal with the realities of being having children who have HIV, having continued intimate relationships with men, how to protect themselves, how to protect others, how to take care of themselves. So I'm only going to say a few more things because I promised Eric and Suzanne we'd have conversation and not just me talking to you. The film is now in a new generation of movement in helping others. One of the women in the film, the one with the blonde hair, Catherine, Catherine and another woman living with HIV, and I teamed up because they wanted to use the film with me as an intervention of some sort. In other words, they wanted to try to affect change. It wasn't enough to just have this film. We actually have curricula that go with the film. We have three versions, a teen version, a woman's version, and a provider version, because we never wanted the film to be just shown with popcorn and then say goodbye and good luck, that there needed to be conversation and skill building along with it. But we now are using the film in a project called Sister Power. The women, again, named the project. Sister Power, S-I-S-T-H-P-O-W-A-H, said with a Bostonian accent. And what we're doing is we're using meditation, a clip of the film, and narrative writing that's shared in a group format, and the women share their writing with the group. And so you can see the qualitative research component. I'm analyzing what the women say And we're recording that information, and we're also analyzing what they write. But we're also looking to see if that intervention affects change on a variety of parameters, which is the quantitative methodology or research component. So we're looking at adherence. If you're not familiar with that word, it refers to not just taking the medications that you need to, but going to see your physician, nurse practitioner, your healthcare facility. It's getting well adult checkups. It's having pap smears, doing all the good things that you need to do. It's also quitting smoking, taking good care of yourself, and safe sex practices for these women. And we also look at stigma, we look at self-advocacy, which gets at that silencing the self piece, and these are all measures that are actually quantitatively calculated. We just finished an 18-month study that was funded by the Hardner Foundation, as well as the Massachusetts Department of Health, and we're seeing effect in the intervention group. We had a control group, so it was a randomized controlled trial from a scientific perspective. 74 women were involved in this, and we see effect between time one, before we started the intervention, at 6 weeks when the intervention ends, and at 6 months. And we've had 100% retention. Which is really a big thing in research, as you probably know, that many people fall out for a variety of reasons, and everybody's stayed with us. Must be the lunch again that we offer, or dinner in this case. But it's been really, we're continuing to try to find meaning in what's going on in these women's lives and how we can affect their voice to really ultimately affect health disparities at that level. So I'm going to stop there. I promised I would. There's so much more I want to say. You can read between the lines on this handout. But I wanted to just talk to you about questions you might have about this idea of ways of knowing, working with these clients, my own perspectives on that, and the Catholic intellectual traditions as I see it.
Thank you so much. We've got a lot